Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Nerds ruin everything. Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about Captain America, Brave New World. But first, before we started recording, Adam was telling me about a show that a friend of your wife's produces?
Yes, yes. Okay. Her name is Maria.
I saw the trailer. It's called Muslim Matchmaker.
Yes. And, like, the reason why I mentioned it was because you... Like, I didn't tell you, but I've watched Rami now. Like, I've watched the whole series. Beautiful
it's
series.
Fucking like, great. Like, it is, it's that BoJack level of, like, this is uncomfortable, and I'm not sure if these people are good people. And by say these people, I don't mean Muslims. I mean this group of people, this specific group of friends.
Yes.
I don't know that they're good people, but I don't know that they're bad people. They're just people in, like, dealing with their own trauma and trying to, like, get out of it, more or less.
Yes, like, absolutely.
It's such a fucking good show. I hate that it's kind of just, it was buried on Hulu to begin with. But, you know, they let him do what he wanted to do with it. Like, it went where it needed to go. I'm sure there was more if they would have given him more, but he got to do the thing he wanted to do.
Yes, and it's a beautiful show. Like, I really kind of enjoyed it in a way that I could not, I can't quantify, because it was like, it's okay, so like there's something like before we get into the show, which it'll be brief, because like I actually would suggest people watching this because it's a window in. It's what I love most about movies and television is give me a window into a culture or into a microcosm of a culture that I do not have any bearings on, and show me how that works. Yeah. Show me that world. And it brings me closer to that those people, but it also makes it so relatable. Like, Rami makes things so relatable. And, like, my favorite episode is the episode that you told me about. That's what hooked me and got me to watch it, which is the Married for a Night episode. I won't spoil it. You guys can go back and listen to that episode that where Logan talks about Rami, but it's a very interesting episode. And that's what kind of, like, hooked me into this Muslim Matchmaker. Like, I was like, okay, yeah, like, let's give it a shot. Maria produced it. Like, she's been a lifelong friend of my girlfriend. She fucking punched me in the face, as she should. So basically the premise is this, is that there's these two Muslim women that are matchmakers. They run a matchmaking company. They've ran it for like about 10 years. They've made over, I think they said they made over 150 matches that ended in marriage. And what they basically do is people in their, like, of all ages, like, but mostly younger people that have not been married yet, and are having trouble trying to find relationships with other Muslims, go to them, and then they, based off of like questions and interviews, match them with somebody else, like a blind date. And then it becomes this thing of a rule of three, where you go on three dates over three, like a minimum of three dates over 3 months, and you have 300 questions that you ask each other. Now, there are some conceits because a lot of these are long distance relationships, and it's basically the, like, in Muslim culture, there's a lot of, like, it's nice to say matchmaking, but a lot of it is, like, what is the word that I'm looking for with marriage when you're arranged marriages? So this way, it allows them to actually look for more of a love and a, like, emotional, spiritual connection, because they're just having problems with it. And it's like these multiple... We over the span of eight episodes, we follow these matchmakers, and they're different. The different couples are these different people that are trying to connect. And it's very surprising because you find that, like the most refreshing part about it is that all these people are like in their 20s and 30s, but there's a lot of the swiping culture involved in this, and like how they're just tired of the swiping culture.
As somebody who has basically, as a single guy for, you know, a long time,
yeah,
I always had to be entrenched in that. It is, I don't know if there's anything, I can only speak from a male point of view, mm-hmm. but I do have a lot of female friends who also, you know, have been single in this era. And mm-hmm. I don't know if there is anything that will ever put you off the opposite sex quicker than this. Like, if you are just, well, if you're looking for something deeper than like, you know, a fling, essentially, yeah. then like, I mean, good luck. But even to get that, maybe if I looked like Ryan Gosling, you know, like,
yeah,
but I don't. And so if somebody on there is just looking for that, like, I'm not the one, like, I'm not getting swiped. So,
and also,
it becomes this frustrating thing. And when you do
yes.
match with somebody, like, 75% of the time they're some kind of scam. Not always like you hear about, like, you can usually tell if it's like, this is a fake profile. The pictures are so photoshopped and, you know, filtered, and it's like, this is bullshit. Occasionally you'll get one with real looking pictures that's, you know, their first thing is like, hey, do you want to text off of here? It's like, okay, well, if that's the first thing, the next question is, hey, send me some money, I'll send you some pics. Like, that's the next thing. Oh. When it is real people, they'll talk to you for a day or two. I mean, like, hey, do you want to text off the app? And then immediate, it's like, hey, I sell content. And sounds... Again, I can only speak to it from a male perspective. Uh-huh. So I the female perspective that I've heard is like friendly banter, take it offline or off the app. And then the first thing that happens is like, here's a picture of my junk. Do you want to hook up? And it's like, you know, I said, if you're not looking for that, it puts you off this so fast, man. It's just like, all women are this, all men are this, you know, and I can see why. Like, I'm not going to lie. There's been plenty of like times where I'm like, I'm done. Never going to date anybody, because every woman I meet, because you can only meet people off apps. I mean, it's almost, that's it. So yeah, it's just, it's very, very frustrating, and I've rambled on about it, but...
no, but that's the point. Like, these people it's really refreshing to watch this show, because it doesn't live up to the whole hookup culture of it, and it also doesn't...
It's actually people looking for something meaningful.
A connection.
Yeah.
A true connection. And here's the most refreshing part is that they do talk about religion, but it's the way that I always hope whenever a show deals with religion, it deals with it in a very nonchalant, like, this is a part of my life. This is important, but it's not in a way where it shoves it in your face like they're trying to convert you, which that's the biggest thing that I fucking hate about any religious, and you know what kind of religious shows I'm talking about. Not like that. It seeps you into the culture. It's like got this great thing where like they talk about a cultural word, and then they give you a definition of it, not by the people, but just in the show, it just gives you this quick like what this word is, and they continue to do it throughout the show, so you're never having to go back and go, oh, what does that mean again? Or you have some talking face go, well, that means this. It just kind of like says, like, that's what this means. Like praying to Allah to find, or praying to God. They don't even call it Allah. They just say praying to God to find an answer. Like, that's what this word means. But also it's like, what's also refreshing about this is that they are not super attractive, like sculpted faces, lip filler fucking people. They're just normal, attractive young people, right? Like, some of them are kind of awkward. Some of them are not. It's like, it's wonderful to watch just normal people trying to connect and really honestly wanting to connect. Like, that's the thing, is that these people that they're choosing, like, it's not like there's a component of religion, but as we both know, Muslim culture is both ethnic and religious, right? Ethno-religious, right? Kind of like Judaism, right? But they also just don't focus on like Arab Muslims. There's Pacific, BIPOC, like Pacific Islands. There's Indian, Bangladesh. It's the biggest religion in the world. And it shows all of these different people and their different cultures, but then also them trying to, like, they have, like, I think it's wonderful because the matchmakers, Hoda and Yasim, they give you a variety of different people, and none of these people are, like, you know these people. Like, that's the best part about this, is that you've come in contact with these people, and they're good people, and they're just trying to connect, and they're through with the swiping culture, and they just want a connection. And it's like when you kind of just reset, these people are in their, like I said, like their late 20s to mid 30s, and they all reset, and they're just like, I don't want to date anymore. I need to find a connection. I need to get married. And there's a guy who's an electrical engineer that worked on the 9/11 tower, and he's a geek, and he like loves geek culture. And it's like, that's the one that's like, that you connect to, and you want to see him like he fails, but then he fails upwards. And it's like all these different like storylines like that you see. There's this young black man who's in Atlanta that's trying to like find his way, and he's an artist, and he's like, he's got this very positive attitude, but then he like crashes and burns with the woman that he's dating because he's just too much of a kid. He's got some growing up to do. Like,
I feel that. why do you have so many toys in your house? pops and action figures and I love this stuff.
Yeah. But it's like this dude he goes on a photo shoot, and on it, in his backpack, he has a Captain Picard 12-inch doll that's strapped to it. It's like, it's great. It's like it reaffirms like in this time in 2025 where we're just really fucking we're in the thick of it of bullshit, right? And you don't want to fucking see anything. It's like, fuck you, Tim Allen. Fuck you, fucking any piece of shit that just like, like, I'm just done with it. But then there's this nice, like, this is kind of reaffirming of, like, life out there is continuing on. People are trying to continue on. And they're continuing on in the, like, what I would say is a positive manner, like, in a way that, like, gives you I hate to use the word moral because it's such a dirty word now for me. But, like, this kind of compass of, like, positivity. Like, these people are trying to do, they're not looking for sex. The people that are, that come into that happen to be in this show,
you could probably suss them out real quick.
Oh, yeah. There's this one in particular. That comes in, and it just fucking, like, you can instantly tell, and they instantly suss it out. And they're like, we're sorry. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We're going to be having a conversation with this guy, you know, but it's like all level of people, and it's just kind of a really great show. Like, I cannot recommend it enough. It's eight episodes.
It's nice that there's a dating show that is like, when all of this, like, I know dating shows have been around for ever.
Yeah.
But when the, like, resurgent happened in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, I was dating somebody at the time, and she liked watching The Bachelorette and, like, all of the, and I'm like, this, it's all bullshit, man, because, like, they're creating an environment that's completely false, that you can never live up to, that's,
exactly,
and it's just, of course they're falling in love, they're setting the stage for that, and then, you know, it all falls apart almost every time, you know. Or we would watch, like, Survivor, or, and, you know, there's inevitably two single people that wind up with each other on that show. And it's just like, yeah, man, like, you're falling in love in the trenches, like, did your trauma bonding, when that's gone, it doesn't work. And
doesn't, like, because you're, yeah,
a show that's like that, the 300 question thing has, like, that's so important, because I imagine it's not like, what do you think about Avengers Endgame, right? Like,
no, it is, like, some of the best scenes are like Zoom calls with these people, and that, like, they allow them, like, they show these people as they ask these questions, right? And you see their reactions, and some of their reactions real time are fucking amazing, because it's like, you kind of talk about it, but you don't really. And then these questions are so fucking direct. They're like, how many children do you want? Do you see yourself wanting to get married in the next year? Like, do you, like, you know, how do you feel about, like, you know, how do you feel about moving to another state? Like, very direct questions that people don't normally ask or answer. Yeah,
because it's all, you know, surface level shit. And
exactly.
Then you're in a relationship with, like, say you do meet somebody on the app, you got along surface level. They're kind of into the same shit that you're into, but you're 3-4 months in, and you didn't have the conversation of, like, hey, if suddenly, or even a year in, suddenly my job is like, hey, we have this position in, it's like Phoenix,
yeah,
and we think you're right for it. We want you to, and there's all this pressure, but then you have this person in your life who's like, who you're attached to now, who's like, no, we're not doing that. Like, you know, like you said, are you willing to move to another state? Is that something, like, it might not happen, but you need to know before you're in a serious relationship, because then you had that conversation, and if she said no or he said no, and you move forward and stay with that, like, you knew that already.
Yeah.
It's not building animosity from, like, oh, well, I had this opportunity and I can't take it because, you know, like, whereas if you know the answer, you had the conversation before it ever even came up, when that opportunity, when your boss is looking at you, or your boss's boss is looking at you saying, we think you're right for this, what do you think? I mean, you might still say, oh, I need to think about it, or I need to talk it over with my family or whoever. But, mm-hmm. you know, you can immediately just be like, no, because I know my partner, whether you're married, whatever, is not okay with moving.
Yes.
You know, least have a sense of that. Or exactly. Children's a big one. Like, how many freaking people get in relationships and, like, one person wants kids, the other person doesn't, and it just creates all this animosity. And you don't have those conversations, because it's not 1942 anymore. It's not the expected thing of, like, oh yeah, you're going to get married and you're going to have kids. And, like, it's a different world than our even our parents grew up in.
Yeah.
And so those conversations are so important to have, and people don't have them. You know, it's all just surface level bullshit. And, you know, it's great, except, I mean, you know, because you're married, like, one of the best, hardest things is finding somebody who you can sit in absolute silence with. And it's not like, well, they don't love me. They're not interested in me. They don't, because they're not talking to me. They're not, like, not having to fill that silence is the hardest, most important thing for me, at least. Because no,
it is.
That's what, like, either you feel that way or they feel that way. It's like, why is this? What's the uncomfortable silence? Whereas if you can sit with somebody and say you're reading and she's, I don't know, listening to a podcast or whatever, it doesn't matter, but you're not speaking to, you're just not talking.
Yeah.
Then that's the greatest thing in the world.
It is. Like, you know, to quote, you know, Pulp Fiction, like, you know, it's like, it is, it's just that. It's just to completely shut the fuck up and just be okay with it. Like it's not an uncomfortable silence. I mean, like,
yeah,
like, you know, my wife and I talk a lot. We spend a lot of time together because we both work from home. But there's moments where, like, you know, like, I'll watch something and she's reading and it's not a big deal. Like, it's just like, okay, fine. Like, we're doing that, or we're reading together. Like, you know,
don't have to entertain each other. Like, it's a really, really complicated thing that, you know, younger people, maybe I didn't understand that when I was younger, but I understand it more now because, you know, we're introverted. Like,
yeah.
So even if I was extroverted and wanted to, like, be more social, like, I still think my battery would run so fucking low. And, like, yeah, now it is. And I mean, not to get too in the weeds, but this is hyping me up because I started dating somebody. And, like, thinking about all of those things. And I don't know. I'm really, really interested in this show. I do. It's on Hulu, right?
Yeah, it's on Hulu.
Yeah.
8 episodes, 30 minutes each.
I saw the trailer and I was like, this is so intriguing because it did seem so antithetical to the swipe culture. I know we have our contentions with the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I did watch the whole show, and there is a, it's an arc, but it's kind of tiny, unfortunately, with the character of Raj and his woes with dating and going back to his parents and telling them, I can't do this. I need your help. Like, I'm 30 something years old. Yeah. I don't have any successful relationships. I've either sabotaged them or the people were awful. And, you know, you guys were set up. I want that.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to tell you, like, in the way that, like, I know it sounds weird, but, like, at the end of it, you're kind of like, I have a few friends that I want to do this for. Like, literally, like, you, when you watch at the end of it, like, at the end of it, you're super sad because you're like, why isn't this a 22 episode fucking series? Because it's like, it's so much, I hate to use the word fun. And I also hate to use the word enlightening, but there's this, like, discovery of human nature and human, like, interactions that's just pure in the way that, like, I know it sounds weird, but it's like, It's like when you interact with a dog, the dopamine hit that you get from a dog. Yeah. And I know this just sounds really weird, but it's like a dog doesn't interact with you in an emotional state that's like if as long as it's like it's not been caged up or anything like that. If it's just a normal dog, like a family dog, that dopamine hit that you get from that fucking pure joy of like, oh my God, a human being. Like, that's the kind of dopamine hit that you get from this show, because it's just like everybody is just like, hey, we're just concentrating on human interactions and let's cut the bullshit.
I know you're work from home, but yeah. Like when other, like, I know you go to the movies, like have you ever tried to have a conversation with a stranger, like, yeah, in the last few years, and the look that you get when you just talk to a stranger?
Oh, God. Like, it's so fucking, like, also, like, but then the interactions, too. Like, you, yeah, try to be a normal human being, and then they fucking act like they're from Pluto, and you're like, what the,
yeah,
fuck are you talking about?
It's bizarre. Like, I know this is, it's not original to us speaking, but mm-hmm. It is, like, I am very much understanding how bizarre it is that we're all more connected or more able to connect to each other than we've ever been in the history of mankind.
Yep.
And we cannot connect. Like, we can't.
Absolutely.
And the minute somebody tries, I am guilty of this too. I cannot tell you how many times I've been at one of the local comic shops or McKay's, and mm-hmm. either the clerk or somebody else tries to talk to me while I'm looking at whatever nerdy stuff I'm looking at. And I am immediately suspicious and frustrated. And I'm like, why are, yes, you talking?
Oh, 100%. You know, and then
that's just not good.
No, but also, like, okay, so, like, let's be real about this. Okay, so, like, we're both sports guys, right? And so, like, I've my entire 46 years, where I'll reverse it once we talk about this. My entire 46 years, it has always been the reason why I love sports and I connect with sports is because as a kid, I was a very awkward kid. I didn't know how to talk, but I could talk sports with people because I loved the game. I had my allegiance, but my allegiance never allowed me so much like division that I couldn't, unless you were a fucking Boston fan, and in which case, fuck you.
You're saying that, and I'm thinking, like, unless you're a New Orleans Saints fan. And then fuck you. I don't want to speak to you.
Exactly. But, like, so, like, here's the thing is that, like, I can always do that, but now I can't because anytime, and you've probably seen this, is anytime you talk to a person about something, like, so my big things are basketball, baseball, and football, right? Like, we know that. Like, you and I know that offline, but for the people that don't know, those are my things, right? But, and correct me if I'm wrong, you've probably seen this too, you can't have conversations with people because they're fucking paranoid junkies that fucking like to talk about bullshit. Dude, like,
it like devolves baseball into so much other stuff so fast. And we've talked, like, when we text about football, which we haven't even talked about the Super Bowl.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, no. There ain't no script now, bitches.
Yeah, yeah. And we've had those, like, fun, like, brief conversations about, yeah, the refs do kind of, like, you we've seen it. Like, you can show me statistics about how the refs didn't help the Chiefs, but, like, I've also watched games where I'm like, that was a flag against Kansas, yes, City, and it didn't get thrown. It happened in Atlanta. I watched that. Yes. I'm watching that game, and I'm like, that's pass interference in the fucking end zone. The ref is standing right there, and he's looking at it and doesn't throw the flag.
He doesn't do shit with it.
But,
yep,
like, ultimately, we are having a very, like, brief ha 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 conversation, and like we might joke about like the script, like you just, but like neither one of us, like we don't have full on paranoid delusional conversations about how the NFL is scripted like the WWE. And I'm like,
yeah,
guys, that's impossible. It's impossible. You can't get that. Like, go talk to somebody who's made a movie with 45 extras in one scene, and all the extras needed to do something very, very specific, and ask them either A, how long they had to rehearse, because it's a Broadway level yes. production, and B, if they didn't rehearse, how many fucking takes it took to get it right.
Exactly.
And you're talking about professional actors who, like, that's what they do. And yep, you're working with 40-something people on the screen at one time. No, it's not scripted, man. Like, even if you're like, well, the outcome, like, okay, well, but there's so much. But it, point being, at work, I will hear so many, like, deep-level conversations about not so much the NFL and not about college football being scripted, but about the conspiracies in college football against certain teams. And I'm just like, come on, man. Like, I agree with you that a lot of the ranking stuff doesn't make sense, but it's not, I don't think it's a conspiracy. Like, I don't. And it's hours long conversations, and that's what it devolves into, as opposed to like me and you texting about like, holy shit, like Mahomes is like when's the last time he got sacked 6 times in a fucking game? Like what the
exactly
what is going on? Like
what the fuck instead is going
it's
on
just
here?
Like oh yeah, the NFL told the Chiefs to like take the dive and. Like, yeah, I don't think so. Like, no, I don't think that's, but yeah, it is so, point being, like, it is so hard to connect with people now. And maybe that's because, like, social media might actually be ultimately the fucking death of humanity. Because we cannot really connect with each other. We can't have real conversations that don't devolve into like paranoid shit. And I'm as guilty as anybody of it, but I also like to think that, you know, I can have those conversations. And like shows like that, especially in the current political climate, become more and more and more important. Because it's people connecting on a level that we just don't connect at anymore. And yeah, it's if I can make the time to watch it, because like I did the math last night on how many hours of television I'm behind on the shows I do watch. And it's like 12 hours. Not including all the other shows I want to start watching that I haven't or finish, like get deeper into. Like I've been trying to make my way through The Leftovers, as you know, and I'm still not through the first season. I had to take a very, very long break because it was only like the fourth episode, but if you've seen the Leftovers, there's an episode where someone gets stoned to death the first season.
Yeah.
And it was so, and it's in the first like 5 minutes of the episode. It was so upsetting. I turned it off and I couldn't do it. I was like, I didn't watch another episode for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
Yep.
And like, I was just like, I think maybe I made a bad choice. I don't know if I could do this. This is upsetting. But anyway, I'm excited to try to get around to watching this show. That's exciting that, you know, A, it got made, B, that y'all know somebody that's involved in the production, because it's such a positive thing. It, you know, more people, enough people aren't going to see it probably, because that's what happens, but it's there, and that it's there is great.
I really do hope that people go and see it, and I really hope that it sounds like they're actually getting a second season. Like, the numbers are early enough to where, sites are talking. Because I actually was genuinely, after we watched the final episode, I was like, you know what? I really want to make sure that, because so many of my favorite, some of the favorite shows that I have don't get second seasons, right? And so I'm like, we're still waiting for Skeleton Crew to get its fucking second season. I'm like, what are you fucking doing, Marvel, Disney? Anyways, it's not the point. But I looked and it was like, early indications are that they're going to give it a second season because the numbers were so good. And they start, like, the thing is that they did preliminary filming so that they could continue on with certain stories, storylines. So they did
the crew's already there, and so film everything you can film.
Yes.
And then
you have that backbone to finish off the stories that you left hanging, and then you can go on to new stuff. So I'm hoping that that's the case, because it is really kind of a wonderful show. But we'll see. Like I said, it just premiered about a week ago or so. So we'll see. But
about the success rate of marriages in matchmaking? Like, when you're on that, I don't mean like the fucking base level matchmaking. Like, this is real deep level matchmaking. And because it's one of the things I read a lot of shit, but I did read up on matchmaking, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And when you do it at that level, the success rate of the marriage itself when it happens is bizarre.
In Muslim culture, it's super high.
Yeah.
It's like 75% to 80%.
Yeah.
But also, that is also in a religion that promotes family and family and connectedness and community, in a big way. So they say the ones that do make the connection, their success rate is about 80%. But then also you got to think about when that matchmaking is done, it's done in a theirs is done in a very different way than just connecting two people together through two families as a means to make the family stronger, right? Like, one's a doctor, one's a nurse, and okay, that works. Or one's a doctor, one's a lawyer, or one's doesn't have a career, but there's a businessman that just wants to essentially breed, or whatever you want to say, whatever the crassest nature of it. This is more of let's connect these people together, based off of fundamental, based off of the calculations of they say on paper, or after interviews, hours of interviews and paper, paper questions, they want these things. Let's go ahead and do our juju magic and look at another person that has maybe not the same, but they have contoured relationship things, like a puzzle piece that connect and work together for one another. Maybe they're not aligned on the way that things work in a certain area, but because of their differences, they'll groove together. Like, me and my wife, there's a lot of things that we are not similar on, but we complement each other, right?
Right.
We complement each other in a great way. And because of that, we work better, as opposed to say two people who are super stubborn, right? You don't want two stubborn people. You want somebody who can ebb and flow and be more flexible, and then one that can be more rigid. Because if you're understanding of one another, the rigidity actually works for schedules or the basics, the pragmatic things, and then
if you had two people who don't give a fuck about being on time, man, that's real hard.
Yes, it is. Exactly. And at the base, that's what this kind of stuff is. And so they find like there's this one couple that connects, right? And then there's this big, like, there's this big roadblock. I'm talking like if you know Muslim culture, you know mothers are a big thing, and the mother is a big thing, and that's the big roadblock. But then I'm not going to tell you what happens, but it is very surprising what happens, and it's all to the matchmaker's benefit because they mentioned something at the beginning that they knew that this was going to be a problem, but their equation on how it's going to work and who these people are, they think that that's what's going to be the solve for it when they get together. And I will leave it at that, but it's an amazing kind of thing that they're doing, because it's not matchmaking in the crassest manner. It's like, let's find two people that can connect. Let's find on the basis of let's connect as human beings. Like, not let's connect sexually, let's like physically, let's just connect as human beings, as two people. Two people that eventually want something greater. And there's this one that, like, this one that's like eye-rollingly fucking just like, she's like, marriage. And you see how it goes. And it's exactly as you expect it, because they're not, because there's no level of connection on a human level. And so, like, it's great that they show all of these different types of, like, of course they couldn't have like predicted it, but the way that it pulls out and the way that it shows in these various different people that like go through this process and who's successful and who is not is a very revealing thing. And it's just wonderful. And it kind of like reaffirms your kind of like, maybe not everybody in the world is just trying to hook up, is not trying to boost their OnlyFans for fucking bullshit to make money. You know, like, there are people out there that genuinely want a connection, that genuinely want somebody that's like, you know what, at the end of the day, I just want somebody that understands me. And a man, that's it's a powerful sentiment. And it's like, this show, you would like, I know that a lot of people would just look at this and go, oh, I don't want to watch this. Like, no, give it a chance, because it speaks more to the human condition than any other day. Like, and more than The Bachelor. I've watched The Bachelor, and The Bachelor is just hookup culture, with the exception of like The Golden Bachelor, which is still kind of hookup culture and drama. But this is not that. This is like actual human connection and seeing people in their element. And like, yeah. So like, I definitely would say for people, like, give it a chance, at least give it one episode, because that one episode, the first episode is what hooked me. It's like, oh, okay. Like, this is what you're doing. Like, I like this. Like, I kind of came in sus because it's like matchmaking.
It seems, I don't know, so fraudulent, antiquated and like,
yes,
shitty. Like, because we've kind of just been, it became like, oh, it's like a forced marriage, and it's like, no, it's not that. It's you not having to weed through, like, I mean, like we talked about swiping culture, where it's like I have to weed through several hundred people, and who are all, I mean, not all, most of them are just lying in some form or fashion about their looks, what they do, their, you know, I don't want to say money's like the, but not gold digging,
but kind social of money, stats. But
just like yeah,
socioeconomic.
Like, okay, like you don't even have a job, like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's so maddening when you're doing that yourself, and like, going to people, not algorithms, people that probably use algorithms, but people that meet the other people and can be like, yeah, we know that this person is full of shit and they're not going to get a real connection. We're not going to entertain that. Whereas like the algorithm, it's what you tell it. Like, the computer only knows what you tell it, you know, it can learn things. Yeah. But like, you have to feed that information. And when that information is lies, like, you're matching with people that are just lying. about who they are. And when you're dealing with real people who are interviewing these other people, A, the people that are coming to them are more apt to not be lying about who they are, and B, they can suss out the liars. So, it's really, really interesting. And yeah, I'm excited to try to catch up with it. Anyway, we weren't going to talk about it long. We wound up talking about it for 45 minutes. that's exciting. So that's the only thing you've been watching. I haven't watched anything. I'm so behind. We both did get a chance to go see Captain America Brave New World this week.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about it. We're going to spoil it. We have, like, unless you read my Letterboxd review and saw what I rated it, we have not spoken about.
No, and I didn't actually see, I didn't see Logan's rating for the movie. So, like, and he doesn't know what I thought about it. So right.
I saw it Thursday. You saw it Friday. I saw it it wasn't IMAX. It was LIMAX, but I saw it in the LIMAX theater. I'm curious how you, just regular theater, or did you get to see the IMAX or?
I got to see it in just regular, it was like Dolby Vision. I got to see it in Dolby Vision, which was nice. I'll start, since it's usually the way that we go on this. I'm of a theory that it's not bad, but it's not great. So I feel like you can, like the first part of it is so sharp, so kind of like, I was like, why the fuck are people talking about this movie in the way that they're talking about it?
You can see where you can see the seams. And
that's
one of the, if I have to lay a fault at this movie, it's that you can see the seams. Like, there's a reason that there are 5 screenplay credits on this movie.
Yep.
You can tell, but not to interrupt your opinion.
No, go right ahead.
I do want to say, like, I think, so the Marvels we had a lot of fun with, but that is also a movie you can see the scenes. It's like, shit, this is like 2 different movies stitched together, maybe 3. And this definitely feels like at least 2 different movies stitched together, much like Falcon and the Winter Soldier kind of felt like 2 shows stitched together, because that's what happened with that show too. For different reasons, but it is. I think that they made the absolute best movie from that. I don't think it's top rank MCU. I don't.
Oh no.
But
this is
there's nothing in this movie. There was nothing in this movie that I found, like, I wasn't bored, which is a big fucking thing. So, because hello Eternals.
Like, oh, Jesus Christ, yeah.
And even parts of the Marvels, unfortunately, a lot of the stuff dealing with Captain Marvel in the Marvels, I was bored with.
Yes.
And that's probably speaks more to Miss Marvel being such a fun, exciting character that whenever she wasn't on screen, it was like, can we go back to the kid? But this, I wasn't ever bored. It's under 2 hours. Which also kind of shows, because it looks like there were swaths of things that they were like, well, we need it to be under 2 hours. So this, there are transitions where it's like, what? there was a scene cut out here.
And there are characters that are seriously, seriously underserviced.
Hello, like, Giancarlo Esposito.
Sidewinder. Jesus,
who is a lot of fun. Like, he's really good in the movie, but I feel like he was cast late, So he was actually a late addition to the movie, but then he's an underserved character. I don't know. It's weird. But I do want to let you get back to your,
No, absolutely. I don't have a problem with it. Like you talking about that, because it's like, that's exactly what, so my biggest problem with it is you can tell the moment that this film changes hands from Malcolm Spellman to the seven different writers that they had on, and it fucking pissed me off. It really pissed me off because the movie that's at the beginning is sharp, fun.
It's a 70s political thriller, man. Like, yes. It's got these weird, shots that were things are like upside down, or like it's this overhead view and the camera like tilts a certain way. Like it has that 70s thriller vibe to it. And it's disorienting and disturbing in a way that like you can get away with in a Marvel movie. It's not extreme, but it's just enough that it puts you a little on edge. And like I was straight through like the attempted assassination, like the way all of that comes about, and somewhere like in the like second half of the movie, it felt like, oh shit, we really got to make a movie that we can market, that we can make toys with, that you know, all of that stuff. So and we can talk about it more in depth, but like I had a conversation with Tim after he saw it, and he was talking about he brought up Samuel Stearns, Tim Blake Nelson, who I think gives one of the best performances in the movie. And maybe I'm off base.
No, you're not. I don't think so.
That's a character like we see in shadows throughout the movie, and when we finally see him in full, it's this nice mix of practical and digital effects work.
Yep.
And Tim was like, but the toys, he looked completely different. He had the big head. I'm like, dude, he was like a brain. Like his brain had gotten so big it was pushing against his skull. You can't have a toy marketed to kids that looks as disturbing as he looks.
It looked like cancer. That's the way that he looked in the film. Like he had cancer bubbles coming out because Ross had fucking injected him and more, and not had like Sidewinder says, like Ross didn't give him didn't take the gamma out, which is funny because that's a big, like, there's a lot of things here that are dropped that feel like things that are going to be picked. Like, so, okay, well, let me go back a little bit to that first half, because this movie is great, is like truly fucking great until they enter Camp Echo. And when they enter Camp Echo, that's where things start getting really wonky. And it feels like, that first portion until they drive, until they're on the road, it feels like that's the movie the director wanted, Julius Ona.
Yeah.
Because like Julius Ona directed one of the great insipid little movies that I've seen in the last 10 years, which is called Loose, which is about a kid who writes it's like this weird social thriller where a kid, an African kid who was raised by two white people, writes a disturbing essay. And his teacher, played by Octavia Spencer, tries to warn people that this kid is bad trouble. And it's a small, small film, but it is a very, like, you would have expected this as a Stephen King short story.
Oh, because wow. Naomi Watts, Octavia Spencer, like that's a hell of a cast, man. Just those two people. Tim Roth.
Yes. It's like the only kind of comparative I can give to it is it's the short story of At Pupil. Like that's how disturbing and how beautiful this movie is. It's a small movie. It's exactly the when you watch it, you go, okay, I understand why he jumped from that to Marvel. Oh, well, like, I mean, he also, like, but he also had another hard issue with the Cloverfield paradox, yeah, which is not his fault. That was another movie where the first opening, like, say, 60 minutes is great, and then J.J. Abrams fucking throws it off the rails with his Cloverfield bullshit. As you, like, I know, like, my running commentary is, like, the running commentary is that I do not like J.J. Abrams, which is not true. I like old J.J. Abrams. I just don't like this new J.J. Abrams. And, like, you know, his daughter, his Nepo baby daughter. I don't care what anybody says. I don't know the music industry. My daddy's not in the music industry, even though my music comes out from Warner Brothers, which is the same place that he has a $1 billion production deal. Sorry, you're Nepo baby, J.J. Abrams, and I don't like your music. It's shit. Yeah, you can put that on. I'll probably, you know what, 20 years later, if I'm ever a director, they're going to come back to this podcast, yeah, and I'm going to get fucking canceled because of that shit. I don't care. She's a Nepo baby. Goddamn. But anywho, Julia Zona knows how to direct. I know this because I've seen Loose, where he was given free reign to do whatever he needed to do. And this film, like I said, until the camp, but then after the camp, it becomes this thing where I feel like
everything moves really, really fast after that.
But also they're dropping things.
Plots get like, dropped. Like, exactly. But then
the Marvel thing becomes a whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Kevin has gotten his fingers into this to where he's like, oh, well, I need to start setting up phase 6 and the end of phase 5. Like, that's literally how it feels, dude.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I agree. I think ultimately, so I actually recorded an episode of Marvel Fanfare talking about the movie. So for a good hour and a half. So if you want more of that, you can also go check out Marvel Fanfare if you're listening to this. It's not as critical as I'm being here. But I had just gotten out of seeing it, and I'm a little bit higher on it than you. I think it's 3.5 stars is what I gave it on Letterboxd.
I do about the same.
Yeah.
My problem is that the first half I fucking really liked.
Yeah.
And then you can see the seams more than I've seen before, except for the Marvels. And that's.
I agree with you. Like, when I was talking to Tim, the thing that I kept in my mind going back to was Iron Man 2. And Iron Man 2, like, I think people forget what a downturn. Now, I know it made money. Sure. I know it made a shit ton of money. But
you're right.
It was there was a lot of like, oh, this is not as good as the first one. There's a lot going on here. Way too many characters. Like, the plot, there are parts of it that it's just like, what is going on? Things added for no reason. And that is the, as great as Foggy is, like, that's the kind of thing where it's like, we have to put stuff in here to set up other things. And that's part of what happens in this movie. I think it's comparable to Iron Man 2.
Very much so. Very much so. What has some great things in it, but at a total, it's not the sum of its parts. Now, that being said, like the thing that I hate the most about this is that, like, the thing that suffers the most is Danny Ramirez and is the relationship between Joaquin and Sam, because like that's the heart of the film, and it gets muddled and lost, and you literally take Joaquin out just to give, like, this is the thing I don't understand, is like you take Joaquin out to have a scene, like, just literally to have a cameo.
I was just going to bring this up. I think the Bucky moment is really, really sweet and really nice.
It's nice, yeah.
Mackie and Sebastian Stan have such a good relationship, and it shows on screen, and they, in Falcon and Winter Soldier, they carry a lot of the weight of that not being super great. Mm-hmm. It's also anchored by some really, really solid outside performance outside of them. Like Daniel Brühl is fucking fantastic in that show. And you get bits and pieces with like Carl Lumley, who shows up here and gets to shine more here.
Yes, he does.
And that's the thing. Like going back to what you were saying, I think having Bucky cameo in this does a disservice to that relationship because it is new and we didn't get a lot of it in the show. So if you follow the show to here, like it's just reminding you that, hey, he's not Bucky and this isn't that friendship. And that's unfortunate to the point where like there's a during the where they're going to the giant thing in the ocean. Mm-hmm.
The celestial island.
Yeah. I thought they were killing Torres. I was like, they're just about to kill Danny Ramirez out of this movie. And we haven't even got a chance to really see him do something with this character because I think he's really solid. That the thing about, much like Iron Man 2, I think the thing about this movie is it's uneven as a movie, but I do think it's absolutely anchored by stacked, solid performances. Even when the characters are done a disservice, I think everybody is delivering fantastic performances, even though sometimes it feels like they're not in the same movie.
100%. 100%. And that's the father of two. That's the father of two different movies, right? Like that's what happened because Danny Ramirez is so good as Joaquin, so fucking good. Like those opening moments, it's like I'm like, oh shit! Like I kind of like this new. Like I like this grounded, like a truly grounded. Like you know. Like he makes, like Mackie makes a joke, like they make a joke, like I should have taken the super serum. Like there's a lot of things that I'm like, what the fuck? Wait, what? When did he have the chance to take the super serum? When the fuck did Bucky become a senator? Which also like we have to talk about because it's like, does that inform on the Thunderbolt? Because
I really think the Thunderbolts is set before this movie. Maybe I'm wrong, but I really think it is.
I'm not sure because, okay, so, like, here's the thing is that I think the joke is the Thunderbolts with the exclamation point and how we keep on talking about, oh, we can't call each other the Thunderbolts is because of Ross being, Ross, like, at the end, Ross not having, because you remember, keep on saying that, like, because, but then that makes a bigger issue for me because it's like, oh, God, that's where I was like, oh, fucking Feige, man, with his having to lay, like, the groundwork here and making it suffer. Because, like, that whole thing of, like, you know, oh, yes, like, you know, is that Senator Bucky, is that, is that soon to be Congressman Bucky? Shut up, please, I'm done with this shit. Like, that's where I see the seams, where it's, like, the writing is so weird in this film, because some of
the
it is
the things you have to shoehorn in, yeah.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you. I understand why it's there. I think a little more forgiving of it. And, mm-hmm. I don't even want to say forgiving. It's more like I'm dismissive of it. I'm like, oh yeah, that stuff's gonna be there.
So it
just doesn't faze me.
So like my thing is that, okay, like you didn't need the extra action scene. You just needed to extend out. Okay. So like the carrier scene, all you needed was, why did you, like, here's the part where I was like, this is all rewriting, is that why did you not, like, I know why you did it, because you needed a final big action scene, which you really didn't. What you really needed to do was keep the Hulk needed to Hulk out in the Indian Ocean. Like, you needed the mastermind, you needed the leader, aka Samuel Stearns, to complete. And have, like, it's so easy because then you, like, I already know this is what happens. Like,
what
I know
if he did, though, Adam, because, like, you, Think about the like, I know you saw it.
Yeah.
The last scenes, that fight between Mackie and the Hulk, like, the fight looks okay, but there are very long, lingering shots of people talking where it looks like the worst fucking, like, there are green screen shots or blue screen or whatever they used back in, like, the 40s to do, like, driving shots.
Yes.
That look better than this.
Yes.
It is so blatantly bad that I'm like, this was literally shot like, hey, we've got the whole movie. We need these pickup shots. That's what it was.
Like, I can guarantee you.
That wasn't the original end of the movie.
Yeah, that was not, like, the original end of the movie is in the Indian Ocean. Hulk's out. He destroys the carrier that everybody is on. And then Falcon and Winter Soldier, or Falcon and Cap have to do something. They finally figure out a way to do it. They get rid of Hulk. And then the last 20 minutes is all about Samuel Stearns. And it didn't play well, they felt, because it was small. And so what they did was they fucking recompensed. Because if you think about it, like, the stuff with Stearns is all still, like, live action, not behind a green screen, right? And, like, that's the movie I wanted. Like, give me a big, like
it's bizarre because the two big creature effects in this movie are Tim Blake Nelson, Samuel Stearns, which looks, I mean, I think it's one of the best creature effects in a Marvel movie.
Like, oh, definitely.
It looks so disorienting. Tim disagreed with me. He thought it looked terrible. I was like, this is like something out of a fucking Cronenberg movie, man.
It is
so disorienting. Like, the glint in his eyes, how they're not like glowing green. It's this like film over his eyes. And like when the light catches it, it's like when you take a picture of your cat or your dog and their eyes are just, it's so, like, disturbing. And like the way his head is like, cause if you go back and watch The Incredible Hulk, the end result with Tim Blake Nelson, it looks ridiculous. This is so different and disturbing. That works. I said this on the Marvel Fanfare podcast, and if anybody wants to take, you know, whatever, I'm going to say what I'm going to say. I think the Red Hulk looks better than any version of the Hulk we've ever gotten in live action.
Oh, absolutely. It looks like Harrison Ford, where the Hulk up until Endgame doesn't look like Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
And this one looks like Harrison Ford. But then again, here's the thing, is that they've had 2 years to work on this.
Yeah.
And now, I guarantee you that go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, that is the one thing, is that they've had a lot of post-production time. So that does help. But it's weird that those two things look so good, and you have these composite shots that look so fucking bad and take you out of it.
Oh my God. So much. And like, here's the thing. Like, I would, just to go back to Nelson, like, his work, like the makeup effect work on him, the only other character that I think bests him is the High Evolutionary from Guardians 3.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Practical effects.
Guardians is an outlier for me. Yeah. Like, I agree with you. I don't. Because Guardians is set in, I mean, it's mostly set in space. And so that, like, it, even though it's MCU, it feels a little different. It's like, of course, all of that looks good. Yeah, yeah. So you're right. I overstepped there. Of our set on Earth MCU. Sure.
Yeah, I guess. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but, yeah, like, at the end of the day, like, the thing is that this movie's first half is so fucking strong, and the fucking second half is so, like, it's not even like, okay, so, like, I don't have a problem with some of the stuff up until, like, the okay, so the Celestial Island, until that ends, I don't have, like, the decisions that they make at Celestial Island, the action scenes, that's where I really start to fucking go, no. Those last 20 minutes feel like Feige going, we need to do this and this and this, and it doesn't work. Like, give us a, like, Jesus Christ, give us a, like,
dude, can you imagine an extended Top Gun-esque sequence with Falcon and Cap in the air with American, like, that scene plays over, like, 5 minutes. Can you imagine a 20, 25 minute, maybe not that long, 15 minute, like, dogfighting scene, like, done level? It would play so well, man.
Exactly. And then, like, here's the thing. The narrative then works because then, like, you capture Hulk and, like, you know, they find a way to capture Hulk, like, between Falcon and Captain America. Like, they find this Hulk and then they find out that, like, this was, like, you know, that this was literally all, like, it's not, it doesn't feel like Japan coming back to the accords, to the peace talks. Doesn't feel so fucking stupid and, like, plottery about, like, okay, let's go ahead and release this tape. It's more like, oh, well, he was the Hulk the whole time, and he knew about it. And there's not this explanation to make him a semi anti-hero-esque. He was just doing da-da-da-da. Like, it really feels like this, like, I feel the weight of it because, like, like, Red Hulk is Red Hulk, and Ross is Ross, and Ross is a bastard, and let him be a bastard. Like, that's and okay.
It is a little nice and also disorienting that you have Harrison Ford being this bastard. Yeah. And but I'm gonna. This sounds terrible. I'm glad you I'm glad Harrison Ford got the step in. It over, sucks hurt. That we lost her. It really, really does. But you recast that part with somebody who, I love Harrison Ford. He's not a young man. If Ross is going to be, like, this thing that might still exist, you probably should not have recast it with somebody who may not be here in 10 years.
Yep. No, absolutely.
Not trying to be shitty, but it feels really like it. You either have to kill the character off, which I understand why Marvel has backed off from killing characters, because you want to be able to go back to that well. But if, God forbid, Harrison Ford dies in 5 years, you either can't ever do anything with Red Hulk again, or you're recasting the part again. I mean, we have Secret War coming. It could completely change the landscape. And so who knows? But it still just feels really weird. That said, I think Harrison Ford delivers a really, really solid performance.
He does. He definitely does. Like, he's allowed to be a bastard. It's just, like, you could tell that he wanted to go full villain, and they didn't let him.
Yeah.
Like the script is like, and I hate keep on going back to this whole thing of the script and the two halves, but it really does feel like there is, like, it's the scene where Blake Nelson is talking to Ford in the character. That is, like, there's no reason for him to stay in control. Like, he should have hulked out. Like, Stern should have won that battle because he is just too smart. And Ford's Ross is a man as such that, like, if you're already putting him in this thing where he is unable to tell the truth about a lie that he created,
yep,
then that's the thing, that's the moment that triggers him. is the Nelson getting the better of him. His ego does not allow it. I mean, he literally, like, there's a line that I feel got changed in ADR, and it's the son line. Because yeah. I guarantee you, that line was boy and not son.
Yeah.
Because the way that Mackie plays it, at the end of it, like, you know, like he goes, son. Like, when Mackie comes out of that room talking to, what's her name? I can't think of her name. That sounds like a man who just got called boy and not son.
Layla is her name. And it's,
yeah, that's right.
I can't pronounce her real name. I don't want to butcher it. It's like Zosia Rokemore. But yeah. And that's another character that's like there with no explanation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we're limited on time as far as telling the story, but like she's underserved, and but she's also a character who's like, I don't know where you cut to add more for her, because you already have a lot of characters in this movie that are getting underserved. So I want to do a rundown of all the major characters in the movie. Or not major, just all the prominent characters, I should say. Yes. All right, so starting with the two smallest, Layla, his inside, like, she's really, really underserved, I think. But also, William Mark McCullough, who plays Commander Dennis Dumphy.
It's Dumphy.
That's Demolition Man, D-Man, from the books, who... Somebody had to point that out to me, because I never picked up that he was Dennis Dumphy. Was like, that's D-Man. And I was like, oh, that is Dennis Dumphy. Like, holy shit. Like, what a great usage of that character. You kind of sort of kill him off. I mean, we think he's dead. Maybe he's not. Who knows? Like, it would suck that it's a one and done, especially, I think, that William Mark McCullough, as an actor, he's done some big things, but he's been very small in the handful of big things that he's done. Like, he's done an episode of The Walking Dead. He was on Cobra Kai. He was on the Quantum Leap reboot. And fairly prominent shows, but very, very small parts on that shows. This is maybe definitely the highest profile thing he's done. I think he's fucking great.
He is great. Like I wanted more of him. Like, I wanted more of him and Danny Joaquin and Sam together, because they just felt like there was chemistry. There was instant chemistry.
It really did. And it was frustrating that he's underserved and then disposed of. Maybe they can undo that, but maybe they don't have to, because, like, again, Secret Wars, who knows where we're going after that.
Yes.
We already talked about Giancarlo Esposito as Sidewinder being, like, so underserved. I hate to keep using that word, but really, it is what it is. He does have some, the shootout with him and Sam, where he just blows up the car.
The car, yeah.
It comes out of nowhere. It, like, I know it comes out of nowhere, but it's supposed to feel that way. I think it works extremely well. I think his banter is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I love that scene. I think it's great. The coming back later, it's very lackluster. I do like that he gets the line when Sam says something to the effect of, like, if you ever break out of prison, just know that I'm going to find you. And he looks at me, says, when I break out. Like,
exactly.
It's a great line reading from a guy who does fantastic line readings. It's just that the character, like, he's just not a big character, but the Cat movies have done this repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it with Crossbones, who was always threatened. Like, it seemed like he was going to be a bigger character than he was. If nothing more happens, he is fun in the movie for what little bit he's in the movie. We have already talked a little bit about Tim Blake Nelson. I think we're on the same page in that, like, Tim Blake Nelson has been in not great movies. Tim Blake Nelson has never given a bad performance. It doesn't matter what he's in. It could be the shittiest shit movie of all time. And it's like, this guy's fantastic.
He really, like, it sucks that it feels like this is the only, like, okay, so, like I'm wrong. Like we'll get to the ending scene, but, like, it sucks when you think about the fact that it's been 15 years, over 15 years.
17 years.
Years since this guy was in a Marvel movie. And
2008, baby.
Yeah, like, you honestly ask yourself, why?
Why?
Like, yeah, like, because he is so fucking good. Now, the buildup...
To be fair, if you count the second Fantastic Four Fan4Stick, it hasn't been 17 years because he's in that movie too, but I know that's not really a Marvel movie, but go on.
I mean, actually, like, it is a Marvel movie now because we all know
that multiverse.
Multiverse, baby. Like if you don't think that all of those characters are coming back because of the level of stardom, I mean,
there's definitely a chance that we're getting that version of Reed Richards.
Oh yeah. Oh, with Miles Teller. Like, oh, fuck, definitely. We're getting that version, and we're also definitely getting that Johnny Storm as well.
Yeah.
Because, like, I have a, like, I think what we talked about the, like, we talked about my theory about Black Panther 3, which takes place after the multiverse. So I would not doubt that Michael B. Jordan is going to be playing that Johnny Storm as well. And you, like you said, that mile, like, Miles Teller as, like, weirdly enough, like, that, like, just as a side note, that Fantastic Four cast is kind of brilliant in the way that all of them are super huge, respectable actors now, right? And if Pedro was to not show up in Prime, but you have Miles Teller all of a sudden being Reed Richards' Prime, I mean, I think I go back a really long ways, as I've said, like I said, and I don't know if you remember on one of the podcasts that we were first on, I said that if you were ever to have to recast Tony Stark, that Miles Teller would have been a perfect choice. I mean, I'm still saying that he's a perfect choice, but also you have him as Reed. And if Pedro is just like a two and done, or like our Fantastic Four is going to take place in an alternate reality that's not the MCU proper, and we need a Reed Richards inside of the MCU proper, I mean, you could do worse than Miles Teller. Yeah. I'm just saying. But
Tim Blake Nelson, I'm with you. You look at that and you'd be like, dude, like, y'all had this. Like, you could have went back to this at any point. And, man, like, I don't know that it's wasted here, because I think it's really, for the most part, really good. Like, the motivation works, the way everything's set up, it works, even if it's not well executed. His performance is great. You get just enough of him. There's a weird scene where he, like, kills two people in a house, and I, like, no clue what that's about, man. Like, that's a whole excise plot of the movie. Like, apparently those people had something to do with him being locked away for a while. But it's okay, whatever. But yeah, it's very, very strange what they do in some things. But he delivers. He absolutely delivers. And yeah, I'm glad they didn't kill him off, but I don't know what else you do with him. He does get the post-credit scene, though.
Yes, he does. And that definitely, it's like, if you're a Marvel head, it makes complete sense. If you're just a normie, you're like, what is this? Because it also, like, it makes me feel like that's why I retracted my statement, because it makes it me feel good, because we know that Nelson is coming back.
Yeah.
Like, this is just the beginning, because he definitely knows about either Galactus or Doomsday, or Dr. Doom.
Yeah. And he definitely, or both, or all of it. And it's such a weird, it's like, your superpower is super calculations about, like, what's likely to happen. It's a stupid thing. It is a really, really stupid thing. But they play it, like, just to the edge of, like, that's dumb. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They really do.
Because, like, it works. Like, it really, yeah, really works in what they do. He doesn't, you know... So the leader in the books, he is that. He is super smart. He is bested. So, but, like, he does have this kind of, like, Dick Dastardly mustache twirling kind of thing, like getting hoisted on his own petard kind, yeah, of thing. And that's not present here. And I think that's the right move, because you threaten to make him a silly villain instead of an actual dangerous one. And, like, I like that he's not going to get you by overpowering you. He knows he can't do that. He's going to try to outsmart you. And ultimately, like, much like Daniel Brühl's Baron Zemo,
yeah,
he's a character that doesn't care about what happens to him, because it's not about what happens to him. It's about what has already happened to him and the people responsible for that.
Yeah, the consequences. Like, I do love that that all four Cap films now have dealt with the repercussions of, or the three sequels have all dealt with the repercussions of somebody's actions in the, yeah, past.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. I love that they continue this theme. And it makes for really great villains. Like, you know, like Zemo, like you said, Zemo was great. Like, I love as much as I feel like Winter Soldier is still the best Marvel movie, like, just ground floor to the tippy top, it's the best. It is the best Marvel movie, and you guys can fight me on it if you want. But Civil War, I feel, has the best villain, and his purpose and his ultimate end game and his execution of it, because he wins. At the end of the day, he wins. Like, it's a great, like, way to end a trilogy, because, yeah, at the end of the day, he, like, it doesn't matter. He doesn't matter. Like, yeah, he got put in prison, right? It doesn't matter. He's done his job. He's fractured the Avengers.
Yeah.
Like, that's
what happens here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I love that. I love that all, like, most of the Captain America movies end in fracture. Like, they always end with Cap never winning. Like, because if you think about it, the first one, he ends up in the ice, right? It's
a great metaphor for war, man. Like,
yeah,
go to war, nobody wins. Might get the bad guy, but nobody wins, man. Like, mm-hmm, because that damage is done. Like, mm-hmm, you see people for who they are when they're fighting. Like, what they're gonna stand for, what they're willing to let slide. But, like, there's a nice deeper meaning there, and that this movie holds true to that, even though it is. You know, I don't think it's bottom of the barrel Marvel, but I do think it's definitely in the lower half of what Marvel can do. But that it holds those themes, it holds true to those themes, that through line, mm-hmm, like, says a lot.
It does.
You know, I'm with you. Like, I really, really think they do a good job, and it's great that they didn't kill Tim Blake Nelson, Samuel Stearns. I even if we never get anything else from him, like, the fact that it's in the pocket, right, is nice.
I don't think so. I think he's going to show up. I think he's a part of Doomsday. Like, to be perfectly honest, like, this movie is so kind of like, okay, so the thing that I hate, but I also love about the third half of this, and we will get to in a moment, is the fact that it's so Marvel-centric and it's so laying groundwork for the coming Marvel movies that I kind of can't hate it, but I kind of do, because it's like, I want, you can do both. You can still make a great, like, Captain America movie and not sit there and have to fucking lay seeds for the next coming, like, yeah, five movies. But one person that we haven't talked about, and I'm probably, you're probably going to get to right now, is Shira Haas as
Ruth, yep,
Serap.
So that's that. So in the books, that character is a mutant. Mm-hmm. She has been changed to be a product of the Red Room. I think it's a smart change.
It is.
There's a lot of there's a lot of political back and forth about what they should do with this character, and what her nationality should be. I understand it. I don't. That has nothing to do with this movie. And
no, it doesn't.
It's really, really, really frustrating that, like, they wanted, a lot of people wanted her nationality changed from Israeli. And I don't know. I was like, it has nothing to do with this movie. Like, if that's what they wrote the character to be, I understand that the real world stuff will always be, you know, a part of all of this, and it can reflect that stuff. And but, like, I don't know, it was a really frustrating thing. And she does everything right in the movie. I think she's one of the minor characters that isn't underserved in the movie. I think everything she does, every time we see her, like, it's what it needs to be. And it,
of course,
fucking, yeah, sucks that the conversation around this actress and this character and her performance is all about what her nationality was, should or shouldn't have been, or whatever. Because I think she's, like every other performance in here, I think she's fucking great. She is this, I mean, I didn't look up her height, but 4 foot and change, maybe?
Seriously. And her moment in the camp is super
fucking great, man. Like, yeah, you have this, they're not super soldiers, but you have these two dudes in these super suits who are getting, trying to fight off guys without killing them that are brainwashed. And then she shows up and she tries to call them off, realize the dudes are brainwashed. And then in this, like, weird mirror of how the Black Widow takes down people in Iron Man 2.
Yes.
Does this, like, hallway takedown that's twice as quick. They get to do the Happy Hogan thing where they stand there and watch her and are like, what? And she just takes them down, man. It's fucking great. Like, I think she's phenomenal in this movie. And I it's a character, like, I don't know what more you could do with her. But also, I'm not saying put her in a fucking skin-tight outfit and make her a widow on an Avenger team. But it's the kind of thing where, like, she could be this, like, minor character, like Coulson, that, like,
yeah,
comes in and out of these movies, but can also kick ass. Like, I think Shira Haas, who I don't know from anything, really. I think she's fucking great in this, man.
She really is. She's like the pop that you kind of needed, that you almost hoped was, Zosia Rockmore.
Yeah.
But she didn't, like, she was hampered because she was the secret security. She wasn't, like, she was like Ross's detail, right? She was her, like, she was his cover. She was his right hand, right? Whereas, like, Shira Haas, character was more of, like, his dirty work, like his security, yeah, like his security leader.
And but also introduced, like his, he's like, this is my head of security. And it's security, like,
yeah,
what? But then you get to see that play out where it's like, yeah, this is why she's the head of my security. I know she's in that show Bodies. I didn't watch Bodies.
No, I didn't either.
But like seeing this makes me want to go back and watch it because mm-hmm. like, I think she's fucking great. And I really, really enjoyed her, man.
Yeah, she is like the surprise, but also like the discovery of the movie.
Yeah,
because she is just so good. Like, I mean, and it's not just like the action stuff. It's like when she's talking to Sam and she's like doing things with like when she's doing her own little like side, like, you know, when she has her side mission, it's like it works. It really does work. Like, and then like the way that she, like her little arc with Carl Lumley's, you know, Isaiah is kind of great. Like where she go, like, and that's like the weird small things that is so hard to track for an actor.
And you don't do the thing that you think they're going to do at the beginning where it's like, oh, she's not really who you think she is, yeah, or she's going to be so rigid in her like loyalty to Ross. Like
mm-hmm.
this is a character that grows and changes and learns, and it's something you don't see a lot of, especially in movies like this. You know, there's always that, like, we're going to butt heads, and she does butt heads with them, but she does her own investigation, realizes what's going on, makes the right choices, you know, holds mm-hmm. Ross to like you're wrong about this. Like, this is not, you know, follows through, gets like keeps Isaiah from like being in danger. It's weird to be like, this character is a breath of fresh air, but she really is, you know,
she is.
It's bizarre that you don't have more characters like this in movies. So when you see it, it's just like, oh yeah, like that's really great. Like she keeps defying our expectations about what she is going to do and who she is.
No, absolutely. And that's, I feel like that for me is what hits it out of the park for her. And that's also like why I can't just totally dog this movie.
Yeah.
Because like the stuff that it does, right through and through.
You talked about Isaiah Bradley, Carl Lumley's, yeah, Isaiah Bradley. Like, I don't want to say he's also underserved, but there is, I think we could have spent just 5 more minutes with him dealing with what he's dealing with going back to prison. And
mm-hmm.
you do get that one conversation he has with Sam and you're kind of seeing it, but like spending it away from other people, like being in his cell with him for just a few minutes, I think would hammer it home more. But
oh, absolutely.
I
mean,
Carl Lumley, like I won't say the performances of his career because it's not like this is a guy that's working with Mike Flanagan over and over. He's in The Life of Chuck. I know who he's playing. I've read that story. I can't fucking wait. Like if it's as good as I hope it will be, it might be like, oh, Carl Lumley, Best Supporting Actor nom. Like, I hope for that. But like, this guy has a huge career. He does. He's done a lot of nerd culture stuff. He's played in the DC and the Marvel universe now. It's really great. He picks up the Dick O'Halloran baton in Dr. Sleep and fucking kills it. And
oh my God, so like, good.
He does really, really great work here. And I wish there was more. I understand why there isn't, but I do wish there was more. But mm-hmm. This is just like hammering home what I'm saying. It's an imperfect movie anchored by really fantastic performances, fantastic, like supporting performances, because we talked about Harrison Ford as Thaddeus Ross. Mm-hmm. And then you have the other co-lead, Danny Ramirez as Joaquin Torres, who absolutely, as we discussed, is underserviced. But the lead, Anthony Mackie as Sam Wilson, like, this is the dude who's had to play support in every single Marvel movie he's done.
And every done it single movie.
With aplomb. Like, he's just been great. And he gets the chance to be the lead here. And I, like we said, the movie's imperfect, but I think he absolutely does the job. I think he's great. He's charismatic. He's fun. He's funny. Like, you believe the emotional stuff, which is the one thing about Mackie that I was unsure of. He's good at doing that, like, wise-ass, cocky, fun, funny. Like, we've seen him do it over and over and over and over and over again, not just in the MCU. Like, you can go back to, I mean, you can go back to 8 Mile, but you can go back to, like, Real Steel, which is a fucking bizarre-ass movie that absolutely works because of performances like Anthony Mackie's. You can go back to The Adjustment Bureau, which is a bizarre-ass movie that works because of performances like Anthony Mackie. I think he's phenomenal. I think he is the right person to be the guy that starts the new Avengers. I know a lot of people would disagree with that, but I don't know. It works, man.
Shit themselves. No, it does. Like, okay, so, like, the most wonderful thing about this movie is that, like, Anthony Mackie is the lead. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, he is the lead. Like, Harrison Ford is not the lead. Like, you know, like, he, like Harrison Ford has definitely gone down to co-star.
To Ford's credit, too. Like, yeah, he does get the and Harrison Ford thing. So it is that special, like, motherfucker, we got Harrison Ford. But, I mean, it's not, there's no ego there. He is top, Anthony Mackie's top billing in the movie. There's no
ifs, ands, or buts about that.
Yeah.
You know, and they gave him, like, the worst part about this for me is that, like, I, like, again, I hate going back to the fact that whatever the original thing was that Marcus Spellman and the other writer had, like, made, I feel like that's the movie that I wanted. Like, and they probably gave him a great movie, but then the Marvel fuckery of it all, Marveling and having to lay down, and we're going to get to laying the groundwork, because there's one more actress that we need to talk about, which I feel doesn't, but does work. It's kind of exciting to see what they decided to put in this movie, Marveling, and what they didn't. And it very much so tells me what the future of Marvel is, especially because we've heard Feige say this is laying the groundwork for, like, the ending of Phase 5 going into Phase 6, right? But we also, like, before we get into that, like, that's probably our final, like, motion about this movie is the overallness of it. But so Betty Ross, played by Liv Tyler. Again, another one, 18 years, right? That fucking phone call, was that an AI phone call that they used?
Me and Tim were talking about it. Tim was like, it was so, I was like, I'm going to say something that a lot of people might disagree with. I don't think Liv Tyler is a good actress. I don't know that I've ever thought that she was a good actress.
She's
very gorgeous. I think the only thing I truly, truly appreciate Liv Tyler is a movie called Empire Records.
Okay, that, and I will give you the trilogy, there's some magic that went around with Lord of the Rings, where she's in it just enough, but her weird, sleepy delivery works.
Exactly. It's like that part, like, she was just made to play that part.
Yes.
Because
and
the way that's written, it's what her kind of acting is. you put her in other things. I mean, go back and watch The Incredible Hulk. She's a real fucking weak spot in that movie, man.
She is. She so is.
I just don't think she's a good actress. I never have. She's okay in Jersey Girl, but
yeah,
it's still not great. It's.
I mean, is anybody great in Jersey Girl?
But the kid is really good.
Oh, the kid. Yeah, she's actually great. Like, okay,
she out-acts Ben Affleck.
But I mean, in that era, that isn't that hard. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, Jason Biggs was out-acting him in that movie.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to get into the Ben Affleck of it all. Fucking Dunkin' Donuts motherfucker getting back with his Ooh, that makes me so mad. I'm sorry. Like, Jen Gardner, what are you doing? Just leave his ass. I know he's like the baby daddy of like 8 things, but I mean, he's still smoking like 45 cigarettes and drinking Dunkin', and he's so unhappy. But anyways, but let's go back to the.
I know he seems pretty happy in those Dunkin' commercials.
He does. It's the only thing that makes him happy, right? Like he's like I'm it's not that he's an actor. Being a Dunkin' Donuts spokesperson, he's a Dunkin' Donuts spokesperson that happens to be an actor. Yeah. That makes me feel like everything in Ben Affleck's career is. Oh, okay, that's why.
Have you seen the 6-minute commercial?
Oh Jesus Christ, yes, and it's fucking wonderful, isn't it? I mean,
the best thing about the Dunkin' commercial though is that we also got the. It's Matt Damon and
Donnie Wahlberg.
No. I'm talking about the Matt Damon commercial where you find out he's the twin of.
Oh God! Yes. And then
that commercial takes a dig at Ben Affleck. Like it was kind of fun watching those commercials. But back to Liv Tyler. I mentioned earlier I'm currently making my way through The Leftovers. She's in The Leftovers. She's, I think, the worst fucking part about that show. Like, I just, that she's going to be, and don't spoil anything for me, but there's a group of people in that show who just don't talk. And I keep waiting for her to be one of those people that just doesn't talk. because I just don't think she's a great actress. There are plenty of things I haven't seen that she's done that I do kind of want, like. She's in Super. I want to see Super.
Oh my God, you haven't seen Super yet?
No.
Okay, Super is. She has a very small role in Super, but oh man, I cannot wait for you to see Super. Like, there. Oh my God, that movie is so James Gunn. It's not even funny, but it's like, that's the movie I kept on going. They're gonna let this dude make the Guardians movie? Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like after you watch Super, you go, there's something wrong with this guy. There's something seriously wrong with this guy, but I like it. Oh man. Like, put that at the top of your list, Logan, because when you see it, there's a moment that you know that this movie is deranged. And, like, literally, when I saw it in the theater, there were audible gasps at what happens. Like, it's, wow. Like, okay, yeah. I'm actually excited for you to see this because I actually want to know what your reaction is to Super. Because I know how big of a fan you are of Rainn Wilson. I mean, of course, like, right? Yeah, that movie is, oh, wow. But, okay, yeah, Liv Tyler, yeah.
She's part of the end of the movie.
Yeah. She, like, that's all she is. Like, she's, like, I mean, man.
And like, it's not good. Like, the phone call was bad, but her.
That's why I asked. Like, go ahead.
Her interaction with Ford, it's just like, yeah, man, Harrison Ford's a good actor. I don't think you know what emotion is.
Yeah. It's so, like, weird because, like, he's acting his ass off in that final moment. Like, he's doing the Harrison Ford lip quiver, like, crying thing that he's developed over the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Like, that works perfectly in Shrinking. Like, when he executes that stuff, you fucking like it's like your dad crying. Like watching Harrison Ford cry is super uncomfortable because it hits you in the heart, because it's like that moment. Like I remember as a kid watching In the Line of Fire with my dad opening night, and when Eastwood starts choking up in the speech about JFK, I looked over at my dad and my dad was choking up. I kind of like went back to the screen. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I can't watch this. I can't watch that. What the fuck? Fuck you, life. I don't know. I'm too young to process this. But even now, I'm like, I feel like watching Harrison Ford cry at the end of Shrinking, like, or Breaking Down. I'm like, I don't know how to.
It's pretty rough. I don't know how to process this.
But going back to like Liv Tyler, you watching it, it's like, why is he crying over this monotone girl?
But here's and you'll be with me on this. It makes you wish that we had lived in a world where Liv Tyler was Betty Ross in the Eric Bana Hulk.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And yes. Jennifer Connelly was Betty Ross.
Oh my goodness, dude.
She would have fucking, like, it would have been the most emotional scene in the fucking movie if it's Jennifer Connelly and Harrison Ford having a father-daughter reunion. And, like, yeah, it would have just been phenomenal. It sucks to, like, I get why you're beholden to it. Like, you did recast the Hulk. You had to recast Ross. So I get paying that back and being like, but Jesus, she's not great, man. Like, she's not great. So that's one of the other things that makes me wish that they had just ended the Red Hulk storyline, even though there's a good chance we never pick it back up. Like, just end it there. Like, I don't know. It makes me not care about this father-daughter relationship because she's so bad.
Honestly, 100%. 100%. I am not, like, I'm not on board with this at all. And that final scene does not work. And like I said, the phone call feels like it's AI Liv Tyler.
It really, really does.
Let's get to something that I find is super interesting. Even though I said, the second half is super fucking, like, whatever the fuck. So let's start with, like, I told you something last week. I was like, you know what? They ruined one of the plot points for me in the advertising. And I'm like, I don't know why they did it, which is the discovery of adamantium.
So which is I didn't see any of that. So I didn't know that was coming. And so, that's the one of the big groundwork things in the movie is the adamantium. We don't get a lot of talk about it. It's only a few minutes. But I do think it's good groundwork. The movie does a lot of, like, inserting things that's like, okay, yeah, this is disrupting to the movie. I think the adamantium thing is really good groundwork.
It really is. Like, because it sets up a lot of things and a lot of questions that we have. Like, and to be perfectly honest, I know that they said that this is the way, Miss Marvel is the first entry point into mutants, but I feel like this is like, okay, this is the groundwork for mutants because adamantium is such a like X-Men centric thing. And it's not just because of Wolverine, but it's also because of like what people do with adamantium and like not just. My thought about it was I felt like, oh, well, Ross has probably been already using adamantium, and it would be a very interesting thing is that if this Wolverine in this universe was created by Ross and not by
Stryker. But they kind of, you can't have that now, right? Unless it's already happened.
Exactly. And that is partially my theory is that maybe Camp Echo is the center stage.
I mean, we see that table there, right? There's a lot of Like, I know it's not as advanced as what you need for what they did with Wolverine, but you do see bits and pieces of like, oh, this was a mad scientist's like wet dream. And
exactly.
Maybe there's a person down there that they infused with that adamantium that, you know, like you can go places with that. And that's kind of exciting. Comic book lover me says it's kind of fucked up if you make Wolverine an American. Like, it's so...
But it doesn't make necessarily... Well, okay, so, like, let's back up just 2 seconds. There's nothing to say that a Canadian wasn't, like, in Ross's world...
You're right.
That they didn't
swipe... That it's the U.S. government that takes a... Okay, I'm kind of with you there, which it makes me sound so anti-American, but, you know, we're in the world, so it is what it is. That the American government would be the one perpetrating this really, really fucked up thing, and it's actually on a Canadian. Yeah, I'm with you.
That, like, and the fact that it's celestial, it comes from the celestial, yeah, right? Like, we finally get a payoff on the Eternals, like on the Eternals Island that we've been talking of, like, since our podcast has started, and we were talking,
we've been talking about like, what the fuck, there's this thing in the middle of the ocean. It's weird that the payoff is adamantium, but
yes,
okay, it really is. Like, that's at least something came of it. So
exactly.
I'm excited to see where they go next with that.
Absolutely. And also the fact that they put Japan, they make Japan a player in this, because
who has set, there are several Japanese characters that adamantium is a origin point of
exactly
their powers are mm-hmm. what they are. You know, most specifically Lady Deathstrike. That's
Silver Samurai.
Yeah, Silver Samurai. It's a lot there. So yeah, I agree with you. It's the good laying of groundwork that the movie does. It might be the only good laying of groundwork that the movie does. But yeah, it's a fun movie, imperfect, anchored by, I mean, some really good fucking performances, man.
Yes, it definitely does.
And just, unfortunately, yeah, it's at least 2 different movies, if not 3 different movies, spliced together. Like, it's unfortunate, but, you know, I don't want to, I'm not screaming like, oh yeah, we're definitely back, but the fact that it's not terrible is really giving me hope.
Yes. No, absolutely. And like, the fact that the next movie is the Thunderbolts, which I feel like I feel like if this movie is just like, this movie passed the litmus test, right? It barely did, but it passed when everybody thought that this was going to be a dog. Like, I even thought it was going to be a dog. But the fact that
the closer we got, the more I was just like, yeah, I'm real worried, man. Nope. And like, that I could breathe even the smallest sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm.
I think is a win. It's not lighting up the box office, unfortunately. We'll see what the second week fall off is.
Mm-hmm.
I know Rotten Tomatoes is bullshit, but like, if you look, yeah, the critic reviews, not kind, but whatever. If you look at the audience reviews, it's got a better audience review than the first Captain America movie.
Yes. So,
you know,
and that's Marvel. Like, it's gonna make more money. It's gonna, like, okay, so like, here's the thing. At the end of the day,
it's like, it cost $200 million. I'm like, it cost $200 million because it was in post production for a year and a half, and they reshot at least a third of the movie, if not more than that, after I guess it tested badly. So, like, yeah, it cost $200 million. If this were the finished script and the movie they set out to make, and there weren't all these delays, and yeah, I'm glad they got extended post production because the Hulk looks fucking phenomenal. But I think it takes this $200 million cost. It doesn't cut it in half, but I mean, maybe it makes it $140 million.
Yeah,
150. Like, yeah. And then we're not talking about like, oh, well, this is a $200 million movie that isn't going to make $150 million. We're talking about a movie that probably at least breaks even.
Yeah. Like, the opening numbers are anywhere between 80 to 95 million, which, considering that the only thing that's opening against it is Paddington in Peru, and that's just such a specific, like, movie. Like, I've watched the Paddington movie. Like, I love the Paddington movies, but I'm not going to see it in the theaters. I'll wait for home video, because it's where I've seen it. That little goddamn bear makes me cry so bad.
I've never seen a single one of them.
they're good. They're very good. They're very well made. The only thing is that the director of the original two, Paul King, is not making the third one.
Yeah, I know he stepped away. So
yeah. But it's gonna make 200, and then it'll have a life on Disney Plus, and depending on what happens in Thunderbolts, it's probably going to retroactively also get a little bit of bump. Like, I could, like, what's going to happen is that they're going to release it right when Thunderbolts goes out to Thunderbolts is in theaters. It'll be on Disney Plus. It'll get a bump there. It'll make its money on home video and streaming, and it'll break even. But also, like, it doesn't, like, this movie was troubled, and everybody knew it was troubled for a long time. And for it to just kind of be able to not be a dog, like, that's the thing that I'm looking at is like, thank God this is not a dog.
It's not a fucking terrible movie. It has bad moments. Like, there's some clear problems, but, you know, it was a fine, fun time. And it's not a bad movie. And it feels weird to be like, that's a win. But like you said,
at
every single thing that we've had to like deal with in the last 5 years, it's not a dog is a win. Like, I've said it before. We've said it before. Like, the Deadpool Wolverine thing is an outlier, because while it is an MCU movie, it's not, it's such an outlying MCU movie. Much like Guardians, I think, where it's like, they're kind of existing in their own thing and they don't have to carry as much plot and weight for the MCU as everything else. So, it's a fucking win that it's going to do what it is doing, and that it isn't an absolute dog shit movie, that it isn't boring is fantastic. So like, it's under 2 hours, barely, but it's under 2 hours. It's a win. It's one of those squeak by wins, but it's a win. So it's nice to have a win for Marvel.
Yeah.
So they're still on the upswing, baby.
It's like, to put it in football terms, it's a, for 2024, 2025, it's a Kansas City win, right? Yeah. It's a dirty win, but it's a win. And it's like, you know, like, not all Marvel movies are created equal, and we found that. And thank God, at least it's not Ant-Man and Wasp.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is so much better than that movie.
Yes, so much better. And like, you know, the universe looks bright. Like, first time in a while between the new two upcoming movies, we've actually gotten some footage of. Like, Thunderbolts keeps on looking to me like it's going to be the new Guardian. Like, I don't think that people are expecting it to, like, I don't think Marvel knows what they have. I honestly don't. I think that it's going to be much bigger because of just how it's kind of feels like it's like the more I see of it, the more I feel like it's a throwback to the 90s.
Yeah.
But not the 90s in which we're talking about like 90s superhero movies, more like 90s like action, right? Like Die Hard, like where is it? Like Sebastian Stan's role would have been Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And fucking like the red the Red Guardian would have literally been probably Jim Carrey. Like I know that sounds like a weird comp, but if you think about it, it's
I'm with you. Yeah. You had told me something about the Thunderbolts trailer and knowing like, oh, I see some things that non-comic fans maybe won't see, but I can see. I saw that trailer. We won't get into it because I do think it's spoilery, but I see what you mean.
They're hiding something in plain sight.
Yeah.
That I feel like.
For sure.
Yeah. They're like, you know what they're hiding. Like, I mean, I even know what they're hiding. I mean, and I have only read a little bit of the Thunderbolts. But it's kind of nice to see it, right? Like you go, oh, okay. So like the original run of Thunderbolts, like the original 90s run that we both
they're heroes, but dun dun dun. Yeah. It turns out they were really villains. it's gonna be a fun, like it's just gonna be fun. Like and
it's gonna be a fun reveal.
This has me so much more excited for Thunderbolts because I know we're beating the dead horse. This didn't suck. It's like it's the whole like this walked so Thunderbolts can run or this ran so Thunderbolts can fucking fly. Like it's got me excited. But before that we have Daredevil, so which we're gonna certainly talk about in bits and pieces for sure because I know we'll both be watching it. But next week, maybe for the first time in a long time, I feel like you've already seen it, but I'm going to the theater 2 weeks in a row because next Friday I will be going to see Osgood Perkins, The Monkey.
It's a wild ass movie, guys. Wild ass, dark, fucking violent, funny movie.
So we're going to talk about The Monkey next week because Adam's already seen it. I don't know what else. Hopefully I'll get caught up on TV. But honestly, it's the same stuff I've been watching. Nothing new. So, who knows? We'll see what next week brings. But definitely talk about The Monkey. I'm really excited for that. We talked about it a few episodes ago. It's a huge fucking year for Stephen King and Stephen King fans. A lot of stuff. And it really does start here. Like, this is the first thing. Even though Life of Chuck has had, like, private screenings and a lot of people have seen it and talked about it, it won't premiere until later this year. So this is the kickoff. And I'm excited, especially after what you told me. I know there's changes to the story, but I'm really excited. I might have to go back and read the story this week just so I can have that fun little like, oh yeah, this is way different. Go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, including Jacob and I doing like mini little kind of commentaries over The Acolyte from last year because we didn't talk about that show. It's interesting to revisit it and try to find like, I mean, we talked about it. Like, we want to like this. It's Star Wars and we want to like Star Wars, but also, man, they dropped the ball in a lot of places. So, go check that out. Like I said, I recorded, about 90 minutes more on Captain America, with a new friend, Stephanie. She saw it with me and we both sat down and talked about it. It was fun. go listen to it. It's fun. And you can check out our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com. I've got a lot of stuff posting up. My monkey review will be up so that you can kind of look at it and see what my overall thoughts were for it. This weekend, though, I'm going to suggest that you guys go on to Apple TV and watch The Gorge. Scott Derrickson's movie.
I was going to ask you if you were watching that. So I need to watch it.
It's very, I'm going to say this. It's we're talking throwback. It very feels like a very 90s action horror sci-fi movie, but big component of romance. I understand now why they're releasing it on Valentine's Day weekend. I really wish I could have saw it in the theater, because this is a movie that's like got two attractive leads. They generate great chemistry. There's a component of romance, but it's not, it's like, you guys will see. It's a very I hate using the word old fashioned, but this puts, like, the first 30 minutes are about the characters. And then you get to like these characters, and they're not just fucking stupid, like, whatevers. And then when the shit goes down, you're
in. I'm going to try to watch that. I might try to watch it. It's on now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I might try to watch it tonight. So
great.
Kind of sort of date night lined up. So, but it's mostly just, like, hanging out at the house. And Ripley has been a little ignored lately, and feeling a little guilty about it, so it's going to be hanging out at the house watching TV and doing stuff and spending time with the dog. I might try to get that tonight, and we'll have a good two movie discussion next week. That would be wild. So so we'll see. This is great. I'm glad we're more or less on the same page with Cap. I'm honestly, I won't go see it again in theaters. I will watch it again when it hits video. I'm excited to revisit it and see how it holds up. We'll see you guys next week. Definitely talk about the monkey. Hopefully talking about The Gorge and the monkey. Now I'm excited to watch The Gorge because that trailer looked good. So,
yeah.
All right, we will see you guys soon.
Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 The Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s back before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerd.